Hey, yo, what is a cypher?
You know, the intensity of it and the skill and the rhythm of it, you know? And that was the cool part about that whole experience.
The knowledge of the cypher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cypher come from? The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cypher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cypher, a weekly podcast where we bring you conversations with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This week, we talk to DJ Dahi. Dahi is a Los Angeles-based producer who has made some of your favorite beats of the past several years. He did Money Trees for Kendrick Lamar, Drake's Worst Behavior, Dom Kennedy's My Type of Party, Schoolboy Q's Hell of a Night, and many others. That run of hits brought him to the attention of none other than Dr. Dre, and Dahi ended up playing a key role on several tracks of Dre's new album, Compton, a soundtrack by Dr. Dre. But there's far more to Dahi than any of that. At a relatively young age, he has developed a style that mixes elements of trap, indie rock, EDM, more traditional hip-hop, and some unclassifiable elements into a unique blend. With all his accomplishments, his recent solo work shows that he's still restless, still experimenting, and still just getting started. We talked to Dahi via Skype from Los Angeles. If you enjoy The Cypher, make sure you subscribe to it on your podcast app of choice. That way, you'll get every episode as soon as it comes out. You'll also be able to check out our back catalog. If you enjoy this show, for instance, you should check out our interview with another key figure in Dre's aftermath empire, Bishop Lamont, on episode 96. You can find more information about this episode, including a list of the songs we play, at thecyphershow.com. While you're there, don't forget to sign up for our monthly newsletter so you can keep on top of everything we're up to. And now, here's DJ Dahi, you bish. I wanted to kind of start off by going back to your college days, kind of when you first got started with music, or at least with hip-hop and DJing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Why'd you start DJing on college radio?
Well, I really didn't start with college radio. I really started with, literally, I was kind of hanging out with some friends of mine, and, you know, she was telling me about kind of like DJing and what was the culture of DJing and hip-hop stuff. It was my friend Mickey, and she was like, oh, you know, you should buy some turntables and try to spin some music and stuff. So I used to have turntables when I was a kid, like my dad's record players and stuff. And I would buy records with my dad, but I actually never really wanted to DJ until, you know, I kind of just really dove into hip-hop records and stuff. And then I think it was like beginning of spring semester when I bought my first turntables. And from there, you know, I just was in my little dorm room just like practicing and playing the same two records forever. So my roommate used to hate me for that. It was kind of just a thing of me really just diving into like production. You know, I remember that year the Blueprint dropped. That was 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably like one of the real first albums that I really was enamored and like just in awe of like the production. You know, I just love beats, you know what I'm saying? I wasn't even really producing at the time, but I just love DJing, and that album really got me into just knowing about producers while I was kind of like getting my chops as a DJ going. So overall, it was just kind of like a whim of just like, hey, you like these records and won't you just buy some and start spending some and do a couple parties and stuff. So that was kind of like my initial thought into why I wanted to do it.
You know, oddly for a hip-hop producer, you weren't really allowed to listen to rap growing up. Like you said, it wasn't until you got to college, you got in the Blueprint, really got into hip-hop production. How do you think not listening to hip-hop really growing up affected your approach when you finally started making it?
Well, I kind of grew up listening to just a lot of different music. So, you know, my parents, they would have a lot of Christian music and a lot of very godly music. You know, like if I would listen to rap, I would listen to maybe a rap group, you know, that was a Christian rap group or whatnot. So I would get that side, but I wasn't really diving in too much into what was kind of like a general artist that everybody kind of knew. I heard some artists, but I never really like, you know, dove into it in the rap world. It was kind of like, oh, you know, here's a Tupac record. Here's a, you know, DJ Quick record. Here's a, you know, Snoop you know, Dog Pound, all these different things. I was kind of like playing in L.A. And then my dad is from West Africa and Ivory Coast, so he would be playing a bunch of different just African music that he would love and throughout the house. And I was exposed to that a lot growing up. And then when I started making music when I was in the seventh grade, sixth or seventh grade, I believe, that's when I joined the band, concert band. And that's where I played saxophone for about like six, seven years on, you know, throughout like my rest of my education. So I was exposed to that side of music growing up. And then I really kind of just fell in love with, like, you know, a lot of like the 90s one hit wonder rock bands, and also to like a lot of the British pop bands too, like The Verve or Oasis or like Blur. You know, a lot of those bands I was really, you know, was a fan of. And so it was funny because I was like the black kid that was hanging out with the Mexican kids who listened to, you know, the rock music. Because, you know, a lot of black kids weren't really fucking with the rock music as much as I would, you know.
Right.
Or I'll be hanging out with the skater kids who loved that type of music as well. So it was just like my ear was always been kind of eclectic. And I've always kind of kept my ear to the things that I wouldn't even say it's different from everybody else, but also to just like, I had an ear for just kind of like the musicality of like just music, you know, and what that really stood for, and kind of like call it just what taps into your heart and your body in certain parts of your life. I think it just made me a better producer, you know. So I think it's really allowed me to think outside of the what I'm hearing now. You know, I really ask a lot of questions when I'm making music. Like, I like, oh, what if this was this, or what if I did that, or what if I did this, or can that really make, does that make sense? So having an ear for music outside of just one genre allows me to just really open a door that, you know, some people wouldn't even think about opening, if that makes sense.
Sure. Do you remember kind of the first time or you thought about the idea of sampling rock music and putting it in a sort of more hip hop context? How'd you first start playing around with that?
Well, you know, the thing about sampling for me has always been, when I was growing up, I used to binge sample. So like if I was going to sample like a Filipino tribal music, cause I remember my friend at the time, he was, when I started making beats, my friend Jay Mill, he had gave me this music program called Acid Pro. And Acid Pro was like a really good program where you could chop samples like just by on the slice key. He would be like, oh, like, you know, he just had a bunch of samples. So I remember when I first started making beats, all my beats were like, you know, just ethnic sounding, you know, tribal chops, and, you know, making into like hip hop beats. So I used to binge these samples and do that for a while and then switch to something else. So probably when I like really started to like do that was, I remember when I heard the sample that Just Blaze used for the Breathe record that he did for
Fab, right?
Fab, yeah, yeah. And so he sampled this rock band, I can't remember the name.
Fabulous is Breathe samples Supertramp's Crime of the Century.
I just remember that sample and I was like, yo, what the hell is this? So then I searched that band, and then as I searched that band, you know, I think, I don't remember what was like the music searching, you know what it was? It was, there was music blogs that were put up where, you know, instead of like actually go crate digging, like people will put up like these little websites and saying like, oh, what's the name sampled this? And then there would be a list of other artists down on those blogs. They were like, oh, you should check out these things. So I remember sampling like an ELO record, Electric Light Orchestra. And like, it was just like, yo, what is this? This is crazy. Like, I've never heard music like this. So I used to sample like those type of records and really just like see where I can find pieces. So a lot of it was just me really listening to like the producers that I liked and like really figuring out, almost like mimicking them and really figuring out, oh, like they found these records from, you know, this genre of music. So they're probably like a bunch of other stuff that I could pull from and use and chop and bring it in. So a lot of it was really me just finding those moments in those records, because I feel like in the rock records, you can find just, I call it, you know, the break. You know what I'm saying? Like, rock records always have, like, just some type of break. Even if it's minimal or something, there's something about it that has a break. And from there, you can take it and flip it and see where you can go. So probably, yeah, it was probably around that time. I remember when early, you know, 2003, 2002 or something like that, when I was like, oh, let me try this out and see where it goes.
And some of the earliest stuff of yours, at least that I could find when I went searching, was from like a couple of years after that, maybe like 2005. Your SoundClick page is still out there if anyone wants to do some deep diving.
Yeah.
And so there was a song on that. There was a song you did with Senbei, When It Rains, that kind of has what was to my ear kind of very like College Dropout feel, like sped up vocals and things like that. It's poverty plus racism, then multiplied by hatred and divided by our ignorance, a nation run by Satan's kin. I truly hope tomorrow will bring some better decisions, because I just cried and wrote Jamal a letter in prison. How would you describe your beats back then? Like, what were you going for at the time?
I was just copying people. I mean, to be honest, like, I just was like, you know, just because I realized, and it was funny, I was just talking to No ID about this, and we talk about, you know, our beginnings of making beats and stuff and just wherever, and how do you figure out the change in your production. It's literally like you just learn. You're learning why someone picked the snare. You're learning the feel of it. You're learning the feel of what they're trying to do in their style. And, you know, at the time, probably my biggest influences at the time were, you know, either Just Blaze, Kanye, or Ninth Wonder. Just from just a current producer standpoint. There's other producers that I've obviously grown to appreciate, but those three for me were like the ones that I wanted to really copy and learn. Like, how did you chop that sample? What were you doing? Or what was the feel of it? I literally was in school. I was in school and trying to figure out what was the pocket and the feel and how, you know, you would make a beat that would fit an artist, and rather than not overpower them or make them feel like they can't get on the beat. Yeah, my early stuff was just like, you can probably hear remnants of just different people in my production just by me. Actually, I need my SoundCloud. I haven't listened to that in years or ages. But yeah, it really was just overall, I think it was just I was just in a learning mode of just production and really figuring out just how to make a beat, a really good beat. And yeah, I guess that was just like my first stage of like finding my own voice in the midst of just really trying to really just hear something that I love and see if I can flip it or change it. You know, one rule I did always have was like, if I can't make that particular sample or thing a little bit better or comparable to it, then I won't mess with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of times you just take a loop and you just throw it in. It's like, oh, I made a beat. It's like, nah, well, you just loop something, which is, I'm not saying that's bad because everybody does that thing, but from my own kind of creative process, I just needed to like really try to chop and change something in the beat, even if it, you know, as an attempt, you know what I'm saying? And if I didn't do that, then, or I just looped it, then I probably wouldn't really do it, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And how'd you get into kind of doing songs for other people? Like, I think, you know, some of the earliest stuff I could find that you were producing and there was rapping on it was like Rob Rush and Thurs, yeah, and all that kind of thing. I used to write every day like it was all I was worth. Words pounded the pages that no one ever heard, because people flash back like the past can change the future. Like, if I didn't do that, I might not be such a loser. Remain calm, I drop panties, drop bombs, drop it off in her drawers while dropping a biting rapper draw, dropping them like I'm Southpaw, but I'm so damn right. All that the real, give me applause, holding my word like it's law, with a lip holding my two balls, thinking the good. How'd you get started doing that?
Well, that was just through when I was in Santa Cruz at the time. Jazz was just the rap group that was in Santa Cruz. It was the Loonies. So I met Rob through them, and, you know, I just had some beats and I was like, yo, check them out. See if you like them. And then I think when I moved to San Francisco, I linked up with a couple of different, I remember I did like a beat battle in San Francisco at the Element Lounge. And it was a funny thing is, like, I always laugh. I just was talking to my friends about it. It's like, I lost that beat battle. Mm-hmm. And I lost it to someone that I knew I was better than. You know what I'm saying? Not on some, like I'm a better person, but I knew, like, I had some dope-ass beats. But I lost. So I'm not bitter. But it was just funny. At the time, I was in the city and I was doing these little beat battles, and I think I did an Herb magazine beat battle in San Francisco one year. I met a lot of artists through there. I think I met Jernai, which was an artist that was in the Bay. Yeah, it was like a lot of, at the time, it was a lot of just Bay Area kind of like underground artists that I, you know, give a beat here to. And while I was working at this art school, you know, I literally just was like kind of just in the mix with, you know, as many people as possible, you know, who would, you know, just pick my beats and like them. So it was literally just kind of like just trying to get my stuff out to people, you know. And then, you know, slowly but surely, you know, I just, the Bay Area was kind of like, wasn't really popping. So, you know, I really made a decision, like I was going to move back to Los Angeles and try this thing out and try to make some music. And, you know, because it was just more prevalent at the time and really starting to build a buzz with a lot of young couple artists, like Colorado. That was like the new LA music, like around like 2006, 2007, mm-hmm. with the mix of things start to happen. And I just made my move and I was like, all right, I'm just going to try to move to LA.
Right. And that's when you met the kind of Drugs Collective guys?
Dirty Rotten Underground Sound, or Drugs, is a Los Angeles-based collective of producers. The founding members were Ty Dolla $ign and Chords 3D. They were soon joined by Buddha, Nate 3D, James Koo, Fuego, and Dahi. In September of this year, Iggy Azalea announced that the collective will be producing her entire next album.
When I first came to L.A. In 2007, my good friend Tunji, who Tunji was a, I don't know if you know Tunji, but Tunji's an A&R now. He used to be an Interscope, and he's actually an A&R at RCA now, but he used to be a rapper, and he was in this group called Inverse. He used to come down to Santa Cruz and do some shows and rap, whatever. You know, me and him just became really good friends. And so when he moved back to L.A., he was like my really first kind of contact of like, oh, man, like, who's in L.A. and who do I should work with? So he linked me up with Tirana Amari, who were was a rap group and kind of building some buzz. And then he also linked me up with Pac Div.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, he did a couple tracks with them and stuff.
She was mad at first. She ain't mad no more. I guess I changed her mind when I opened that door. You're my number one. No matter what you do, I know I drive you crazy, but you'll always be my favorite. You're my number one.
Those are like the two groups that I really started to just really build like a sound with and really start producing for and really to get my chops wet in the LA scene a little bit more. The Drugs thing really didn't come till I went to a Two Dope Boys party in LA, and it was just a bunch of different artists and people who came through. I remember Kendrick was there, Schoolboy was there, all the TDE artists there, I think Blue, Thurs, like it was just like anybody who was somebody or building to somebody now or whatever was there at that little barbecue party. And that's where I met Chords, who was part of Drugs, and we met and he was like, yo, let's, you know, get in the studio and started to work. And from there, you know, it just started a friendship, and we started just building and started making, you know, music for Iggy. I think Iggy was like the first project we did together.
Yeah, you did a song for a lot of people might not know that, a song for a kind of pre-fame Iggy Azalea.
Drop it. My bitches, yeah, they drop it. I see you on that pole. Work that shit. I pay for college. Supporting.
Were you in the studio with her while you were making that, or?
Nope, not at all. I've seen Iggy once, and she didn't know who I was, and I didn't know who she was, and then we actually never spoke. But it was just at the time I made a beat in studio, and I left, and then I told him, like, here, take the beat, and you guys can write and do stuff to it. So, yeah, she did the record, and, you know, it was on her first EP.
Dahi here is, of course, referring to Iggy Azalea's 2011 EP, Ignorant Art.
So you're doing all this stuff, you're working with all these people, you know, you're moving from the Bay to LA. Is there a point where you look up and you say, like, hey, I think I'm actually developing a style of my own? I think, like, I've arrived at something that's distinctly me?
Yeah, no, I don't know for sure. I think what I realized about my style and what I really liked was like trying to find a way to sound like I'm DJing, but also sound like I'm producing at the same time, which means like having the record move in places where it really necessarily shouldn't. What I mean by that is like just making a sound and making something that's recognizable. For me, I don't like producer tags because I just haven't found something that I like that I would actually make. But I've also never looked at my music as kind of like in this one genre. I've always looked at it as like it can go anywhere. But I think for me, when I really figure out what my style was and what I liked is really probably, to be honest, like 2010 or 2011, when I kind of just got into a couple of music programs and did a couple of things. And I just found a couple of things that I really liked and really developing a style. And even if I changed like a sample or if I changed a certain type of drum kit or feel, like I can still kind of find something that's recognizable to me, and people can kind of, I think that was around the time people started to come up to me like, oh, I really recognize your sound, and because like you kind of have a familiar feel, even though the beats are totally different, like it's something that we feel in your records that it's yours, it belongs to you, and in the way you do your drums and the way you find different rhythms and stuff. And so I really say probably around like 4 to 5 years ago is when I really started to like just kind of go haywire and just really make things that I stopped making beats for other people. I just made beats for myself. And that was like the turn of like, oh yeah, like, you know, you kind of have to come into my world a little bit to like get that feel, you know what I'm saying? If that makes sense. Like, it's kind of like,
yeah,
it's more about me just really doing what I want to do rather than kind of doing what everybody else thinks I should do.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the stylistic elements, I think, you know, you can kind of break down a couple things that are distinctly yours. You know, one of them is you use vocal sounds frequently in your beats, not as vocals, but as almost like a musical texture.
Yep. Shit's real and I just begun. So many ladies want to share my tongue. Man, it's life of mine. We in the league, we impress the time.
Church, church ain't work, still wanna kill niggas. Tried to go to work, but work ain't work. Work ain't work for the field, nigga.
Really made me feel. What is it about that grabs you?
I just love language. I love the sound of just the voice. How the voice is to me like the first instrument, to be honest. Like, I feel like that's just the first thing that we've kind of crafted in our own psyche of how to make music. And I think what I appreciate about, for example, like I used to love French rap, and French rap was like, surtout va pas croire qu'il y aura 10,000 filles. Je dis ça pour ma famille, je n'étais pas parti en vrille. On me jette de la terre, on dépose quelques fleurs. Seul, sous son sol pleureur, solar pleure. I don't even know what the hell they were saying, but just the style of it and the rhythm of it was just crazy to me. And I just always used to remember like, oh yeah, like I would love to just flip something and chop it and see where it can go and sing. And so, you know, over time, I've really just developed a keen sense of like a melody in somebody's voice and how to make it into a harmony or how to make it into an instrument, essentially, and how to chop it and figure things out and connect it to whatever song is going on. So, and I feel like, and that's one thing I didn't really hear in other people's music. You know, I really was like, oh, this is something that I haven't really, the only producer that I really would, that came to mind was like Timbaland and Pharrell, who would use their mouth to like make sounds and do things with the production. And you were my sun, you were my earth. Pimps in the crib, ma. Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like
and making it like really connect with the music. So it's almost very tribal in some sense, you know. It's like it's very just kind of indigenous, you know.
Yeah, and another thing that kind of goes with that theme is you have this, you know, unusual, often pitched percussion.
Yeah. Look at you, look at you, and look at you. I'm glad that they chose us. Command is a mission, trying to fight to the finish, just to see if my finish. Me and my niggas trying to get it, yeah, bitch. Hit that house, yeah, tell me, is you with it, yeah, bitch. Home invasion was persuasive. What's persuasive? From 9 to 5, I know it's vacant, yeah, bitch.
Where did that come from? Was there a particular musical inspiration for that?
No, really. It was really just experimenting with the pitch bends and kind of like the technology a little bit. I really didn't have a particular reason why I did it. I just, because, you know, I used to pitch bend a lot of samples to really figure out, you know, to match the melody and match the key of the record. But then one time I was really just was like, yo, let me see if I can try to pitch bend the drums and see if they give a certain sound. I don't know. I just really was attracted to it and loved the way it kind of made me feel, almost like a little bit like I'm kind of like in a daze, or I'm in some type of zone that is, you know, not in the normal rhythm feel. So it was really just kind of experimenting. And that's one thing I feel like that's a part of producing, that, you know, you find your own sound, is really just experimenting and trying stuff that is a little bit off. And that was one of the things that I did.
One of the mixtures that I like about your style a lot is that you'll put in, you know, what people might call trap hi-hats, the like super fast hi-hats, into non-trap beats, into stuff that is, you know, very different. Like you said, maybe a little spacey.
Yeah.
We got Serato at the spot though, and we party with some bottles. Go full throttle, that's the motto. If I pull up, she gon' follow. Used to hit all them potholes. Picked up the tour van in Chicago. Now we pulling up in drop roads.
How do you fit something that's so distinctly associated with that, like, Atlanta trap thing into a completely different context?
You know, the way I equate it is, it really has to do with kind of like what's going on in society, if that makes sense. Like, it's very, I kind of think of music as, it's all about timing, you know, because a lot of times this wouldn't probably work maybe 10 years ago because our ears are different. I look at it from a standpoint of what's going on now and how can I fit it into what I want to make and see if it makes sense. So a lot of it is just me really seeing if trap is in right now, how can I take something that's trap and bring it into something that's a little bit more organic or something that's a little bit more fluid of kind of like just musical. And to me, it was just really a combination of that idea and combining the two and seeing, you know, what I could make. So yeah, it's really just, it's more of a theory thing to me than a actual kind of sound. Cause I think it, you know, Lord, thank God it has made sense, you know, and I could have been totally wrong, but.
No, it's worked out okay so far. You know?
Yeah.
It's definitely been good. You know, one of the things that's happened is in the maybe, you know, 4 or 5 years since you've gained notoriety as a producer, this trend of the like beat breakdown or beat recreation videos has really taken off, and you've done, you know, your share of them.
Today, we're here to talk about the Hell of a Night record I did for Schoolboy's Q album, Oxymoron. The track I did for the album is called Hell of a Night. It is one of the more up-tempo type records. I just kind of want to show you the process of how I made the beat and kind of go through certain things. And, one of the sounds that I had was this sound loop that had a dope kind of like, kind of just melodic tone. And I can play what that sounds like.
What do you think about those? Like, do you wish they'd been around when you were coming up? Do you feel like they're cheating? Like, what are your thoughts about them?
No, I look at them as well. For me, for example, like, I'm a person where I don't, if I'm doing one and I do a video, I kind of look at it like, if I give a secret or if I tell someone like, this is how I made this beat or whatever, it kind of forces me to not do that again. Or it forces me to like change something up because I don't want to get, you know, you're kind of giving your style, you're kind of giving your insight of like why you made something. And I think it's helpful because it's inspiring, you know what I'm saying? You're inspiring someone to think a little bit differently about their process and how to make things and create something in a way that is, you know, understandable. Because a lot of time when you're learning, I feel like watching someone is sometimes the best way of learning because, you know, it's hard to read a book and know like what's happening, especially in music. Like, sometimes you just got to see it and feel it. So from my standpoint, like, I really enjoy making them. I think they're really great. I think they're cool. I think it's a way to connect with your, you know, your fans or the people that you, that people that, you know, pay attention to your production. But also too, in the same token, it's like, for me at least, like, it really allows me to really think like, okay, I'm going to give a gem here or two, or give them some things that are beneficial to, you know, just kind of like the process a little bit and what was going on. But overall, it's like it kind of makes me just kind of change up a little bit.
Right. Like, oh, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It's like, it's funny because people have wanted me to do certain beats once. I'm like, well, I don't want to give that away just yet. But once I make it, and I do it, and it's like I almost got to let it go, and I'll try to do something else and really make something new or make something different and go into the mindset that, you know, I've never made a beat before. So it's really just – I think they're great. I really think they're something that's – it's like watching an instructional video about how to mix a record or do something like that. You know, you learn tips all the time, so I have no problem with it.
And, you know, one kind of – before moving into some of your specific songs – I wanted to ask about your sense of melody. I feel like that really comes out, especially on the Toys project.
Yeah.
There's definitely like a lot of experimenting with melody. It seems like you're, you know, even on that project, especially like, you know, developing your sense of melody, working out ideas. Uh-huh. What can you say about your relationship to melody?
For me, melody is the idea of kind of making sense to what are these five things kind of all connected together and creating. And for me, I try to, when I make beats, I try not to clutter the song. Like, I don't really put a lot of stuff in my music. Like, I really make a decision and kind of just stick to almost like force myself to almost like in a sense, like I limit my tools, if that makes sense. Like I don't really use a lot of things in my production. Like I kind of just make a certain kind of decision and say, this is what I'm going to use and that's it. And I have to work within that box. But in that box, I'm able to really figure out how to craft something that is very, I call it minimal, but also too very impactful. And for me, the melody that I pick in the record or just the actual harmony or you know, the sonics and where the progression is going is really just a certain feel that I'm looking for and how it makes me feel emotionally, how it connects to my life, how it makes me feel happy or makes me feel angry or makes me feel, you know, just put me in a certain mood. And those are things that I think about when I'm kind of trying to find that melody or find that space, you know, because a lot of music to me is very just a moment that you're trying to capture and really that can create a memory. And from there, I kind of just find whatever that is. And, you know, hopefully it can create a memory for me that allows me to reminisce about something or create something that's authentic for that particular time. So it's literally just like a way to make me feel, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And some of the, you know, specific songs that I wanted to ask about, that song you did with Logic, the Never Enough song,
uh-huh.
That's like so different than most of your other stuff in terms of instrumentation. There's horns, there's like more guitars, things like that. They don't call my bluff, cause my mind is going crazy. This shit is never enough. When that liquor get pulled up and that green get rolled up, when the sets get thrown up, I'm like, nah man, hold up. Yeah, we about to show up. What was making that like?
That was great. I was actually in the studio with Logic when we made that. We had booked a couple of days to just kind of come up with stuff off the top. And I had these samples my friend Frank Dukes gave me that he made. And he was just like, yo, can you, I don't know, I just pulled that sample out. And hearing Logic's album and kind of knowing his vibe and his energy, I just loved the feel. And I loved the way he could rap on that type of beat. And it was cool because it kind of reminded me of it just had this cool kind of like a Tribe Called Quest type of feel. I don't know if that makes sense. Like it just had this cool kind of like 90s hip hop feel, but just with a bounce of today. Where it's like, for example, like there would be damn, I'm really trying to think of a record that it reminded me, but it had that like that Native Tongue type of feel, but just with current drums.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that we just found and loved. And, you know, I, you know, had the trumpets and stuff and we just found the bounce and the feel and the little vocal, the female vocal chop in the beat. And
It's really, I mean, to be honest, like, that beat was just a really an experiment that we were just in the studio and we kind of crafted up. But the idea of it was very much in that vein of like, how can we take an old school kind of sample feel, but just really give it a bounce of today and a pocket of today. And I think it's definitely one of my favorite records that I did, because organically, I think it was just like really about kind of the moment of like, damn, what would this record from the past sound like with the beat of today?
And sure. Yeah. And, you know, you did a couple records on Vince Staples' new one, the Summertime 06, which, you know, been getting great reviews, obviously, like really well-loved record. And I can't exactly put it into words. Maybe you can, but I feel like your contributions to that record are cohesive.
My mama was a Christian. Crit walking on blue waters. Was fading up at Davis. Then walking back to Palmer.
Even though they don't literally sound like each other in ways that I can put together, they like go together in some way, go within the feel of the album. So did Vince have any kind of input into that?
No. I mean, when I came in on board, the first record I did for Vince was Birds and the Bees.
Birds and the Bees, they wanna be, they'll never fuck with me. Rounds up in that chamber, I'm a gangster like my daddy. My mama caused another problem when she hit me.
That was like the first record that he had taken for me. It was just a beat I made and he had taken it. But really me, it was me, him, and No ID. And we literally just was, me and No ID just really made a bunch of beats together before Vince even came in to the actual sessions. And we just found like a really dope pocket that kind of made sense to the album. And I kind of, the only album I really, right now, I relate Vince's project too is probably Hell Hath No Fury by The Clips, because there was a real minimalist sound to it.
Fucking with college bitches, we're innocent. Looks like Maya, corrupt their mind, turn them to liars. I groom them well.
But very cohesive, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was very, that album to me was a dope album because the beats were different, the feel was different, but there was still like a shoestring kind of feel that all the records really connected to each other. And, you know, my contributions was really like doing whatever I do vocally or adding, you know, a certain type of just sound, you know, I would add that and kind of make it throughout different parts of the record. So, you know, Vince's idea of this record, his contributions just on the production side was really just, you know, he really wanted to have a certain emotion that was only going to come from a certain type of, I guess it's a certain type of drum, you know what I'm saying, or a certain type of rhythm that he could kind of really feel what he's saying. Because there's a lot of stuff that we change beat-wise where he was like, yo, I don't like this beat. Not because I don't like the beat, but it just doesn't fit with the particular sound of the album. So literally, you know, we just kind of just all got in the same room and really just kind of figured out, you know, the puzzle in the sense of what, you know, what is he really trying to say? What is the message? Like, what's your, not just story, but what is your purpose of how you really want people to hear this album? Mm-hmm. And, you know, just see you as a human being.
Right. You mentioned something in there about, you know, working with No ID on that record, and that kind of gets into something else I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
There are a few songs you've done. I would point out, like, I Don't Fuck With You by Big Sean and Deep Water, the Dr. Dre track,
uh-huh,
that have multiple producers credited on them.
Uh-huh.
Big Sean's 2014 hit, I Don't Fuck With You, was produced by Kanye West and DJ Mustard, with additional production by Dahi. In addition, also included in the song's writing credits is the producer Key Wayne. Dr. Dre's song Deep Water, which we talk about in depth on episode 130 with another one of the song's producers, Focus, was produced by Dahi, Focus, Dem Joints, Cardiac, and Dre himself.
How would a situation like that work? What in something like that, what is each person really doing?
Pretty much like the process of me when I work with other producers is really just you know, if we're in the room together and like we try to make a track, a lot of time we just take different roles. And I kind of think of it as a band where, you know, every person can't do the whole beat. There's some producers who are like, yo, I want to do the drums, you know, and I want to do the melody, I want to do this. And it's like, you know, it's really just a natural progression of like, you know, someone plays something. It's like, oh, dope. She's got the melody part. So let me just go in and mess with the drums and just kind of piece it by what I'm hearing, what the other person is. Because a lot of times it's a confidence thing where, you know, sometimes you may not think something dope, but then the other person in the room is like, oh, that's dope. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. So it's almost easier to make a beat because you're not second guessing the process. And that's the cool part about, you know, making music, because you're not really overthinking it, you know what I'm saying? And but sometimes it's a chemistry thing too, and to people that you're working with and who you're able to collab with. That's, to me, what makes a successful co-production song. And when I was working with No ID for the Vince album, it really was just selfless, you know. It's kind of almost a selfless attitude. Deepwater was selfless. Like, we all went into the room and nobody cared about being the star of the beat or doing that. It was like, yo, let's just make something together and see where it goes. And I never look at it from the standpoint of just, I need to have it all. I just really look at it as like, you know, this is going to lead up to something else. So I just want to give it whatever piece I can give it, mm-hmm. even if it's small.
And, you know, speaking of Deepwater, you know, you did a few tracks on the Compton album. What was it like to hear your beats mixed by Dre? Like, what was that experience like? Did he do anything in the mixing stage that surprised you?
I really wasn't surprised by the mix of what Dre did. I mean, that's what he does, you know. I really just felt very, I don't know, I even the whole experience of the whole Dre thing, to me is just kind of a little bit like, I really feel like it hasn't happened, if that makes sense. Like, it really feels very, to this day, like, I didn't work with Dre, you know what I'm saying? Like, I got that in my mind. But overall, I think it was just really cool to have Dre. Dre even told me before, like, you know, he liked the way I mixed my records or the way my beats sound. And I was kind of like,
That's okay to hear. Yeah, that's a pretty, pretty good compliment.
you know what I'm saying? So yeah. It's kind of like a thing where it's like, you really just feel like you're in the right room and you're in the right space and you're in the right environment to allow yourself to kind of grow in places where you didn't see before. So overall, it was just dope, man. Like, I really can't explain it other than the fact that, like, I really appreciate the opportunity and appreciate the fact that Dre really was like, yo, you got some dope stuff, bro. Like, come mess with us and build some stuff and for it to actually come out. That's the actual thing where I'm like, okay, because Dre makes his record all the time, but it actually don't come out. You know what I'm saying? So this was the one that actually came out. So it's just kind of it's just weird. You know, you're just like, damn, you know, I don't know. Like I say, it feels overall just kind of like it hasn't happened, you know?
Sure. And one final question about Compton.
Yeah.
Where did the idea to use that, like, harpsichord sound on All in a Day's Work come from? That's not like an instrument that normally like screams hip hop, you know?
Oh, that was just, that was originally from my boy, Danny Keys. And, he had the sample and he made the sample and me and Khalil just flipped it. And he was like, oh, hey, you know, to be honest, that I wouldn't even really call that particular record a hip hop record. It just felt like a jam session, to be honest. Like, it just really felt like a jam session. And it was more about me just feeling the music, you know, I was going to use that beat for my project, you know what I'm saying? But Dre wanted to keep it. So it was literally just like, just a jam session, and it turned into a beat, and, you know, Dre wanted to use it. So overall, it was just cool. You know what I'm saying? Like, it really wasn't a thing of, yeah, it's not a typical instrument using hip hop beats, but, you know, Dre is Dre, and Dre's going to use something that's going to be a little bit different. And he's shown that over time. So.
And, you know, going from one icon to another,
uh-huh.
you did some stuff with Madonna. And, you know, I wanted to move in on Beautiful Scars for a second on that record.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because there's something about that that's cool. I think the way it sounds to me is like, you took your style, right? Some of your stylistic elements and how you sound, but it's in like the overall box of her like pop disco thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that got me just wondering, like, how did your collaboration on that tune work?
I worked with my friend Blood Diamonds, and he led a lot of the production on that particular beat because, you know, he's kind of more connected to the dance world. And, you know, I kind of, in some sense, like, just really followed him, followed his lead in where the record was going. But I, you know, obviously, I'm comfortable with certain things that I do and what I can make and provide. So that whole process to me for that particular song was just me kind of just taking a backseat a little bit to, you know, Mike's style and me bringing what I, my elements to the record to kind of, you know, just kind of bring it home a little bit and give it a sense of, you know, just me, you know, and that was cool because overall that working on that particular album, you know, I really, it was new territory for me, to be honest. Like it was just something that I really wasn't, I wouldn't even say comfortable doing, but I just didn't know like what other people, like what they're used to and how to really, you know, match what I do and bring it into a space of like creativity that's like, you know, I still feel comfortable doing.
Sure. I mean, I was going to say that, you know, some of the songs on there start out, at least the first like minute and a half are kind of completely new territory for you. Stuff like Body Shop and Devil Pray.
Yeah. Zip up the hood and see what's good. I need a tune up in bed. My brush is low, I'm on a roll, but my transmission's flown. I heard a thump and then I know. Hey, you work at a body shop. You work at a body shop. Take my sins and wash them away. Teach me how to pray. I've been stranded here in the dark. Take these walls away.
Acoustic instruments, you know, little to no drums. And then, you know, like I said, stuff kicks in like about a minute and a half in or whatever. What made you go in that kind of totally stripped down direction for those tunes?
I mean, that was just really a team effort, you know, to be honest, and really, really collaborating with Madonna and Mike and us really just kind of just bringing it all together. And, you know, the thing I can say about me is really that I guess I don't really look at music as if that makes sense, like my imprint on the thing, on whatever it is. Like, I really, it's not my number one goal, I guess, when I'm working on, I guess, an artist project that they are in the room and like I'm making stuff with them. And really it's just like, you know, how it's almost psychology. Like, what do you feel like is best for your message? And what do you feel like is essential to where you want to go? And again, it's like when you're in the room and you're just making stuff and somebody says, oh, I like that. You're like, okay, cool. We figured out something. You know what I'm saying? We came to an agreement to whatever that is. So a lot of it was just me just experimenting, me and Mike experimenting. She said, I like that. And then we just go down that road. You know what I'm saying? So it's really like a path of finding the trail, if that makes sense. Like really finding whatever the pathway you want to go. And, you know, I think we did that.
Yeah. And it seems like you want to kind of replicate that in some ways. I've read you saying that you want, you know, after post the experience with Madonna and Blood Diamonds, that you want more of your projects to be that kind of collaborative, you know, people in a room thing. Like, why try and replicate that in what you want to do in the future?
Because, and this is a key thing that I've really come to really realize, is that I guess you don't want to pretend that you're this big thing, that there wasn't other influences that made it happen. And for me, it's like to have a space and be around a group of people and create music in a way that's collaborative. You always find something that the magic moment, if the right people in the space that somebody contributed to, and that was in that somebody was in that room. So the way I look at music now is just that I don't have to have all the credit, you know. Like for me, my name is my name, and you know, people know who I am. But I'm more concerned with kind of like how can we make whatever this is get to the point of greatness, mm-hmm. or making it dope. And that sometimes is by bringing in someone who does what they do and can make something dope. And I know what I can do. Like, I know what I can make, but I know there's things that I may not just, I know it's not necessarily, I love it, but I it's not really, I don't feel the natural state of me kind of feeling it. Sometimes knowing someone who can do that is sometimes just as important. So
you don't want to do the Prince model of you wrote, arranged, record, played everything just by yourself.
Yeah, I don't have to do that. I don't have to do that at all. I mean, at the end of the day, my whole job, I just want to be able to be the one to finish the record. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And make it what it is. So, honestly, that's the process I'm really learning now. Like, I haven't really figured it out, but I'm just learning as I go, and really building up to something where it's like, okay, yeah, like we got a system and we got something that really helps it. You know, it's all coming together naturally, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I did want to ask about Toys, your solo project. We mentioned it briefly before. So it has, you know, it's songs inspired by different 80s and 90s toys, Slinkies. Transformers. Simon, stuff like that.
Yep.
I mean, how'd you come up with that concept, and what inspired you to like keep it going through a whole album? I can see being like, oh, I want to make a beat that, you know, sounds like a Slinky or something, but then to do, you know, 10 or 15 more things like that takes a lot of dedication.
You know, that particular project was just me, really just me just like bored, and me just thinking of my childhood and thinking about what was the things that I really grew up on. Cause I grew up on TV. I grew up on toys. I grew up on, I grew up kind of like on my own in some sense. Like, I have a lot of brothers and sisters and things, but I was the oldest. I was like six, seven years older than my actual siblings. So, you know, when I was growing up and I, you know, had people to play with, like if I wasn't playing with my friends, like, I was in the house by myself and just listening and watching cartoons and doing whatever. But that particular project was just like an inspiration of that particular moment in my life. And I really didn't know how to express that other than the fact that I was just a happy kid. You know what I'm saying? Like, I really wasn't a kid that had a lot of troubles. Like, I really, really felt like I grew up in a great, good home and kids. And the beats that I did were all kind of like, in some sense, happy, and that I really just thought of myself like, this beat reminds me of, this sound reminds me of this particular TV show, or this thing reminds me of this particular thing. And I really just kind of got into a zone, and really just, as I did maybe like five beats, and then like four or five beats, and then I was like, oh, this reminds me of something. And then I just thought to myself, oh, this reminds me of this show or this cartoon or something. And then from there, like, I had just made like eight more or something like that, and just got on a roll and just started being in this kind of zone of just like, this reminds me of the moment, you know? So overall, it was just really, and that was just me listening to a lot of samples and listening to a lot of like eclectic kind of rock, kind of like, I would say like newer alternative kind of like hipster rock. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, yo, let me, I like this sound. This is really dope. And it reminded me of, you know, when I was a kid. So
yeah.
it was just a fun project. Like, I'm happy it's been well received, because I didn't even know, I just put it out and, you know, people were really dope, kind of connected to it. So I'm happy it did what it did.
Yeah. And you have a couple newer solo songs you released under your own name, Caped and Drop, that are kind of leaning in a like dance or EDM direction.
Well, both of those songs are just kind of just, I just released some stuff. I really didn't, it was more like me just dropping a couple of things that kind of unexpectedly, not necessarily what my direction is going to, but just more of like, oh, here's a moment, you know? Like, it really was me really just saying to myself, oh, I like this, let me just put it out and see what people think. So the drop record in particular was just something I had did with Coors Light. They had sponsored or put me in one of the commercials last year. This year.
Originally, Quillite came to me to help produce music for their Refresh campaign. And my goal from a creative standpoint was to just make something that was really going to make people connect to, you know, the aesthetic of the commercial. The best music kind of comes out of not really being locked into like a certain aesthetic or rule.
And we had one of the songs, that was one of the songs from the actual spot. And they were like, oh, we want to help you, you know, promote that particular record because people been asking for it. So, you know, we were like, all right, cool. So, you know, they gave me some money to do a music video and put it out.
And you got some fencers for the video.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just like the concept of that was really just like, yo, let's make something that's cool and different and that has something, still has the same impact energy wise to the music. And we were like, yo, sporting event that people don't think about that is intensive. And we were like, yo, let's do fencing. So yeah, people kept asking me like, do you know how to fence, or do you, like, I was like, I have no idea. I don't know anything about fencing, but I don't know. I just really, it was a learning experience for me. Cause like I actually did learn about fencing and learn about the sport and where it comes from and just, you know, the intensity of it and the skill and the rhythm of it, you know? And that was the cool part about that whole experience. Like it was dope to just do something that necessarily doesn't feel comfortable to me, but at the end of the day, and when I'm finished with it, like it's going to be a facet that people almost expect me to do, where like they expect me to try something different. You know what I'm saying? They don't expect me just to give them the same stuff. So
yeah,
I was happy with that.
Yeah. So speaking of trying something different, what are you up to right now? What's going on now?
Right now I'm working on my album. I'm working on my first full length album. It's great, man. It's been a really good like time for me creatively, just because I'm inspired by, you know, just kind of like the world right now and kind of the state of the world. And I really just want to make music that represents, you know, a moment that people can, you know, feel happy about and feel good about and feel, have a sense of hope, but also a sense of drive and really making them understand or see life in a way that has them not second guessing their decisions and things, but really feeling the moment and knowing that, you know, it's okay. Like you just gotta be good and be good to people. And so all those themes that I'm talking about, even though they're just like voices, like all have to do with the type of record I'm making. So it's a really good process.
That's great. And instrumental record or?
Nope. It's going to be a full length project with other artists featured on it. And, you know, it's going to be, it's going to be like a real album with singing and rapping and instruments and stuff. So it's like a real, real, real album.
Nice. And one last thing before we go,
mm-hmm.
I was just curious about, so you did Jesus, the Lily Allen song.
Uh-huh.
What did you, how did you feel when you first heard it, you know, and the hook on it with the pop star names in it and all that kind of stuff? That's like, you know, playful, but maybe a little bit actually kind of challenging and using like other people's names and stuff.
With when she's only on her debut, we're all watching Gaga, LOL, dying for the art, so really she's a martyr, and second best will never cut it for the divas, give me that crown, bitch, I wanna be Jesus.
How did you feel when you heard that?
I thought it was funny. I thought it was funny as hell. I just know like Lily's kind of wit and what she, you know, is kind of trying to, you know, make a little controversy,
mm-hmm.
But you know, overall, it was just fun, man. It was really just, I really, when I first heard it, I was like, okay, I see what you're doing. I see what you're trying to start. And I don't know, I felt happy about it. It was really cool. Like, that's one of my like really favorite records that I did, because it was something different, something dope, first of all. And I didn't really, I felt the impact of the record could be, even though it may have not been as big as I would like it to, I think the impact of the record had helped me into other paths of music, because it's just a dope kind of feel and a dope concept and a
cool kind of just playful record that still kind of is kind of dark too. So yeah, I loved it. I love that record. It's one of my favorite ones I've done.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, brother.
One of the things I try to do when talking to producers is get an insight into their style. Dahi provided that in spades. I'm so glad that I got to share his insights into his sound and creative choices. Hopefully, you'll hear his beats in a different way now. Every once in a while, a producer's sound is perfectly matched to the times. Dahi, I think, is a great example of that. His Catholic approach to sampling, sounds, and styles reflects the information age and shows that hip-hop production can incorporate aspects of indie rock, classic rock, and even EDM while still sounding like rap. Join us next week when we talk to a hip-hop fashion icon, April Walker. Walker is the founder of Walkerwear, a brand that was worn by all of the top entertainers and athletes of the early 1990s, from Tupac to LL to Biggie to Mike Tyson. She was one of the first black women to succeed in a fashion industry that, even in its so-called urban spaces, was still defined by men. We'll find out how she did it, get some great stories, and even discuss the recent rebirth of Walkerwear. As I mentioned at the top, make sure you subscribe to The Cypher on your podcast app of choice. If that app happens to be iTunes, give us a rating or a review. If you want to take an extra step to support the show, you can make a donation at patreon.com/thecyphershow. Even a couple bucks a month will go a long way. You can find us everywhere on social media at The Cypher Show. Hit us up. Let us know what you thought of this episode, ideas for future guests, anything you'd want to talk about. More information about this or any other episode, including playlists and a lot more, can be found at thecyphershow.com. And while you're there, remember to sign up for our monthly newsletter. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sitaro.
So it's more about me just really doing what I want to do rather than kind of doing what everybody else thinks I should do.
The show is engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
It's inspiring, you know what I'm saying? You're inspiring someone to think a little bit differently about their process and how to make things and create something.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
You know, I've never made a beat before, so it's really just, I think they're great.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
Really just me, just like bored.
Special thanks to our Patreon supporter, Scott Limbacher.
Just thinking of my childhood and thinking about what was the things that I really grew up on.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Sorry, one sec. Give me a second. I got to blow my nose. I'm saying, hold on.
Yes, no, yes.